Good morning, folks. Thank you, Omega Phamsa. Lovely introduction. So, one of the things I find very interesting this weekend is noticing the way, well, we all relate to similar things in slightly different ways. So, as I go through this weekend, hearing the different people speak, you see connections, and you see different ways of relating to things. So, I just find that very interesting, the way that we're all different, aren't we? And we all have our own ways of expressing, relating to very important aspects, very important principles or whatever. So just to kind of give you a ranging shot, when I was thinking, particularly last night, I was thinking, I'm a dynamic relational person. I don't know what that means. That's not some kind of system or model. That's just the words which I had for myself. As I was thinking particularly about Adishtana, how do I relate to the idea of Adishtana? Well, I relate to it in a dynamic and relational way, it seems to me. So what that means, well, what does Adishtana mean? These definitions, we're still working out what it means, it seems to me. And for me, Adishtana is very simply, it's life, it's movement, it's unfolding, it's energy. That's what most engages, activates, moves me. Of course, it is important to say in the direction of enlightenment. Obviously, we need to say that. It's not just any old life. But in some ways, that's the in the direction of enlightenment is definitely in brackets. It's like, yeah, of course, that is important. But actually, it's just about life. It's about movement. It's about energy. So that's for... I'm going to speak in those terms. And just... as another sort of introductory comment, it occurs to me as I think about this, but I think of Adishtana and Dharma Niyama processes and superpersonal force. They all mean basically the same thing as far as I can say, or at least they can mean the same thing. There's an aspect where they all overlap. So that might be going through your mind as I speak. Some points you're thinking, well, isn't he talking about the Dharma Niyama processes or the superpersonal force? Well, to be honest with you, I think they're all the same thing. So, what is Adishtana? Adishtana, for me, at its root, I think of it as an invitation. I think of it as an invitation. And I've got a nice little three-letter acronym for you. I think of it as an invitation to be ace. There you go. Isn't that nice? I thought of that yesterday. I was quite pleased with myself. So what is it? It's an invitation to be ace. There's three stages of relating to it, you could say. So we have to accept, allow, and access the Adishtana. We have to commit to it, be changed by it, convert to it, and then we have to express, extend, and evoke it. So that's, I'm going to speak in those terms. So what do I mean by accepting Adishtana? Well, very similar to Amalavajra, actually. The thing I want to speak of here is as I was preparing for this talk, I was listening to Subhuti's talks he gave here a few months ago. It just really reminded me that, for me, Subhuti kind of, as Amoga Vamsa said, I worked for him for a number of years, and he more fully holds the archetype of kind of embodied wisdom, living wisdom, than Bhante does. Like, I've never related to Bhante as a live, moving force, as a vigorous force. I relate to Subhuti in that way. Just as a little sub-note, I think that's why, at least for my generation and beyond, I think it's really good to watch videos of Bhante. Like, people talk about listening to the talks. I don't really get on with that. But watching videos of him, I find very, very moving, just to see that vivid, living force. So I really recommend that to my contemporaries, as it were. Anyway. Yeah, so Subhuti is as a source of Adishtana, of a flow of Adishtana. It's very interesting. I've watched Subhuti talking about Bhante a lot, and there's something he almost always does, which I find for me that's the pivot point of what Adishtana does. Maybe you'll relate to this either in your own experience or watching other people talk about Bhante. So when he talks about Bhante, there's a certain point quite early on where he gets this glint in his eye, and he talks about Bhante being dangerous. And that is, I'm convinced, I've never asked him, I don't think I need to, I'm convinced that is Bhante's principal quality that Subhuti responded to, that sense of danger. I've heard others speak of it in the same way. Chintamani was in our group just yesterday speaking in very similar terms. I've heard Mangala speak in similar terms as well. So what is the danger? What is the danger? Well, the danger is the possibility of it changing our lives. You know, this interaction with a human being where they're some ways they're inviting us to be different, inviting us to change. That's the adhesion that we've got a choice whether to allow it into our lives, to accept it, to, you know, in some kind of funny way, open ourselves enough to be able to access that invitation. And again, Subhuti very much, Subhuti did that for me. Like, I think I would have been in the room today if it wasn't for Subhuti. I don't know if I would have been standing here today. I was practicing the Dharma life. I was relatively close to ordination. But there was a particular point with Subhuti where I went to him with a problem. I went to him. I wanted to have a 5-minute conversation with him about a problem. About an hour later, I left his room in a slight daze and with this kind of dawning realization that I'd asked him to tell me what to do with my life. And he obviously, I think that was a seed which led to him asking me to work for him. And in some ways, that feels like I just want to evoke that a bit more because that's, you know, that sense of accepting an invitation, which is dangerous. The moment, I can very clearly remember the moment Subhuti asked me to work for him because it felt like it was a pivotal moment in my life. And I'm sure we've all had similar experiences in different ways, different forms. It felt like there were two divergent paths. There was a path where I say yes to this man. I have no idea where my life's going to go. It's going to be difficult, stressful. I'm going to get overwhelmed, done in, have a hard time, blah, blah, blah. All of that, which was entirely true. I definitely did have a hard time working for Subhuti, mainly through my own mental states and way I relate to the world. All of that was true. So I could say yes and walk a path of who knows where, or I can say no and spend the rest of my life wondering what might have happened, where I might have gone, what could have been. And, yeah, well, I think that was a moment of, you know, this adhisthana, this force, this blessing, this transformative force, this flow kind of touching my life, and I had a choice as to whether I accepted it or hid from it, and I'm glad that I did. Just as a little, this is my little plug, but it's more of an aside. A few years ago, we had on an order weekend, we had a meeting of young order members. We had breakfast together. Just want to give you a statistic, which I come back to again and again. There were 16 men in the room. 15 of us had done entry-level jobs in Sri Ratna. Entry-level, by that, what I mean is the sort of thing when you show up a bit of a mess and somebody says, come on, mate, come and do this with us, and we'll give you something to do. In a way, it's that thing of you've got this invitation. Adhisthana is an invitation. It's this moment of flow. But that needs a way to express itself. It needs a context in which to change. So 15 out of 16 of the young order members in that room had done entry-level Tree Ratna jobs. So change. So we accept the invitation, and then it changes us. We have to change, however you want to put it. Is that an imminent or is that an active force? Well, presumably it's both. It's both receptive and dynamic. So I just want to mention Sudarshan at this point. I don't know, probably many of you knew Sudarshan, at least in passing. Some of you won't have met him, but you may know who he was. Sudarshan died in 2009. He's the first public preceptor to have died, as far as I know. I might be wrong there, but he is a public preceptor who's died. And he was also arguably the most significant order member in India. Subhuti and I were in India at the time he died. We heard the news very early on the day he died. And I was fascinated to watch Subhuti's response over the coming days. Because it was a time of some crisis for the Indian movement. If you imagine a gathering like this, if Sudarshan had just died, a significant number of us in this room, he would have been either our preceptor or our Kalyana Mitra or a decisive spiritual figure in our lives. So it's like, well, what, you know, how do you respond to that situation? The way Subhuti responded, to paraphrase him, is he repeatedly communicated this message. Sudarshan proved that the Dharma works. Sudarshan proved at the Dharma Works. Sudarshan was a beautiful man. He was a lovely man. There were very deep qualities of love and kindliness and concern and energy in him. But the point is that he wasn't born that way. Sudarshan was, you know, he was a good bloke when he came along to the movement. I don't know. Subhuti knew that. Subhuti knew him when he first came along. Sudarshan was a good man when he came along, but he became a great man. He became a great man by practicing the four strands of our movement, to use that language. He practicing the teachings, the practices, taking up the institutions, the responsibilities, and following in the lineage of inspiration. So he kind of proved that the Dharma works. And now, and this is, of course, the important point, and now we must do that. We must continue that message. We must take it into ourselves and we must live it out and communicate it to others. So obviously I'm speaking as in relation to Sudarshan. That's true for many people, you know, as the order ages, more and more people will die. And hopefully more and more people will be able to say the same thing about them. They proved the Dharma works. They proved that the Dharma life works. They made themselves great men and women, you know, developing the qualities that they already had, but on the basis of our practice, our system of practice. So I think it's... one of the little things which I found very interesting, important here, was I think one of the issues Subhuti was addressing is the danger of us becoming devotees rather than disciples. This is, Bhante talks about this in either the survey or the Bodhisattva Ideal, I can't remember which. So if you imagine, you know, the devotee basks in the adhishtana of a teacher, they get off on it, they love it, they kind of writhe in spiritual ecstasy, yet they are not changed by it, they are not transformed by it, and therefore they are incapable of extending it and expressing it to others. So again and again, we need to be disciples and not devotees, to use that language. Yeah, we need to express the adhisthana, carry it forward. So I'm sure we've all had experiences of this, and it's very funny that, you know, last year when we were talking about Dharma Niyama processes, I'd use exactly the same example as I'm going to use now to communicate where I, you know, in my life, I feel like I'm in touch with that flow of adhisthana, that flow of the superpersonal force, that flow of the Dharma Niyama processes into me. And it comes, the moment comes... And as I say, I'm convinced we've all had that experience. The moment comes when you open your mouth to say something and you feel the hairs raise on the back of your neck and you don't quite know what you're saying, but you say it anyway, and it is the truth. And I do mean that quite literally. I do believe we do speak the truth. All of us do, from time to time, in moments, maybe in words, sentences, paragraphs, pages, hours, whatever. But we have those moments where we speak the truth. And I know we do this because I was speaking with a friend who's in a study group the other day, and he knows as well. He can feel it too from his side. He feels the moment where just that energy, that invitation to change your life, they feel, you know, our mitras and friends, they feel it too. They feel that kind of, ooh, something's happening here. So we all have that experience. Imagine letting it fill us, and imagine letting it expand into us. I've got this kind of spatial image. If you imagine the flow of adhisthana kind of coming into us, it could be quite small. It could be just one moment, one little touch in our lives. But then we've got, so it's coming into this jumbled pattern of our being, this flow of energy directed towards enlightenment. And we can let it reorganize our being. And the more we do that, the more we're able to let that flow extend onwards. There's more opportunities for that flow to express itself and pass on. So I'm going to lose my bet with Saraha about not going over time here. freely confess that. So I just wanted to tell you a little story to evoke that a bit. I've been living in Birmingham for the last 8 months, working, communicating the Dharma, which has been great. And although at times challenging and difficult, one of the first things I did is I co-led a introductory course with Mahasiddhi, who is in the audience. I smile at him. And... yeah, that was a bit like a flow of adhisthana. For a start, adhisthana is a bit radical. It's a bit dangerous. I think the most dangerous thing we did in that course, as far as I was concerned, I haven't checked with him, is We co-led a meditation. I don't know if you've ever done this before. We were both speaking at the, not at the same time, but within the same meditation. That felt deeply radical. If anybody wants to shake up their life of communicating the Dharma, lead a meditation with your friend. I tell you, it's a very interesting experience. So, yeah, doing that course with Mahasiddhi. Of course, the other thing, you know, talking of Kalyanamitrata, Mahasiddhi and I are friends now. Effectively, we became friends through doing that course together. That's the basis for our connection. So that's, you know, in a way, that's an added bonus. So, yeah, so we're trying to express this Adhisthana. We're trying to communicate it through us. We're trying to let something go forward, go into the future. Does it make a difference? Does it make a difference? I don't know about you guys, sometimes it's really hard to tell. So, like a month or so ago, about a month and a half ago, I was definitely feeling a bit down in the dumps. I was feeling a bit kind of like, oh God, this is hard work, and not very many people come to my classes, and they're all old and get spun out whenever I say anything kind of challenging. So I was feeling a bit down in the dumps. And I just happened to have a chat with a young woman at the Birmingham Buddhist Centre, and it's funny, isn't it? So I just, you know, how's it going? And she wanted to tell me this story. She's really apologetic. She was quite embarrassed about telling me this story. I had to kind of, I definitely, you know, when you have to get it out of someone, I had to really kind of like root around in there to get her to tell me this story. So she told me a story about the raisin. So I don't know who amongst you have done the raisin experiment, where you, basically it's a mindfulness thing where you get people to spend 10 minutes experiencing a raisin. I love it. I think it's great. She told me about her experience of eating this raisin on her first night at the Birmingham Buddha Centre, which was the first night of the course that Mahasiddhi and I ran. And basically, it changed her life. It's amazing. She told me that after eating that raisin, she had like an intimate experience of that raisin, as it were. She had a living experience of that raisin, consuming that raisin. Since that day, she hasn't been able to put meat or fish in her mouth again because she became aware. Isn't that amazing? What I find even more amazing is she thanked me for listening to her telling me that story. I'm like, no, thank you. It's amazing. So I was utterly amazed. I then told her that I want to tell you all this story. And she thanked me again. I'm like, no, thank you. What I particularly like, and we'll have to check in with Mahasiddhi about this, is I don't know who led that part of the evening. Like, she thinks I led it. I think Mahasiddhi led it. I don't know who Mahasiddhi thinks led it. But, and I quite like that, you know, this kind of this blending. It's like, it doesn't matter whether it was Mahasiddhi or myself. It's like, you know, between us, we did something which touched somebody's life. That, you know, in a way, that little moment, that little spark carried on. You know, and it changes people's lives. So that's that in a nutshell is all I want to say. I think, you know, we can be ACE, to use my little acronym thing. We can accept, allow, access the Adhisthana in our lives. We can be changed, converted, committed to it. And we can express, evoke and extend it to others. And if we do that, then Adhisthana will flow into the future. Thank you.